is Chris and Kira on 2FM.
Blind Boy, what's going on, man? How are you?
How are you, lad? Not much.
Are you dosy? Okay?
What? No, I have a bit of a crinkly throat.
Oh, yeah. Man, I've had that now for weeks because I had a cold. It just hasn't gone away.
Chris gave it to me, so I've been battling through it for the last couple of days.
Oh, I gave it to you. I see, Kira.
Do you know what? Everybody in the country at the moment has some sort of sniffle going on.
This has lasted me weeks, though. Like, I still have a hoarse voice from it. It's ridiculous. So, look, Blind Boy, look after yourself. Lem sip and chicken soup and all that kind of stuff.
But all that bullshit, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. You won the e-cigs tonight, it sounds like you are. I'm sorry, Blind Boy. I'm just now fascinated with your e-cigs because...
I know.
I tried one of the e-cigs a little while ago. They're amazing. They have like hazelnut and strawberry and all that. It's wonderful. What flavor are you doing tonight?
Skittles.
Nice, man. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can relive your childhood and smoke at the same time. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is everybody's childhood,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. But look, yeah. Friend of the show, Blind Boy. He comes on every week. I love when we have chats with him. We try and get another perspective from Blind Boy. It's always great fun. And you know what, Blind Boy, me and Kira were just having this chat before we came back after that track. And Kira's reading a book at the moment, which I honestly think, I don't know whether or not you've heard of it, but I think you would love this book. And it brings up such an interesting idea of shame as a deterrent, as in maybe we shouldn't have laws that put you in prison or that give you points or that fine you. Maybe the laws should shame you. Because Kira, what's the name of the book you're reading?
Okay, the name of the book is it's called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and it's by a guy called John Ronson. People would know him. He writes for The Guardian. He's an award-winning writer. He's written screenplays for movies. You know the movie Frank, Chris, that was out last year?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
He co-wrote that as well.
With your man, what's your man's name? He had the big head on him.
Lenny Abrahamson directed it.
And then who was in it? He had the big head on
Michael
him, didn't he? The big papier-mâché head. Yes,
Michael Fassbender.
Cool, all right.
This guy is amazing, right?
Yeah.
And I read this book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And what it is, right, it just kind of chronicles a lot of the stuff that has happened on Twitter and people being publicly shamed on Twitter and what it has done to their lives.
Sure.
And after I see outrage, let's say, on Twitter about something, I usually forget about something after a couple of weeks, you know?
Sure, sure.
Or someone will be like, oh, Kira, do you remember that story? I'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember. But this book deals with the impact of being publicly shamed and how it affected the lives of those that were shamed. And these people... I'll give you an example, okay? We all remember Justine Sacco. She was the one who hopped on a plane. She was going to South Africa and she stupidly tweeted, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just
like,
kidding.
It's so stupid.
I'm white.
Well, you can't help but laugh at how stupid it is,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
it
was,
she had 142 followers. She was working for some PR firm in New York. It was her dream job or whatever. She got on that 11-hour flight, right? And I remember, Chris, me and you, we talked about this at the time as well. We were like, what the absolute F is going on here?
Sure.
She got on an 11-hour flight. She got off. There was people waiting to take photographs of her as she got off the flight. There was people calling for her to be killed. She's interviewed in the book or whatever. There was people who were willing to boycott the hotel that she was staying in South Africa.
Whoa.
Because literally within 2 seconds, I think it was something within a period of about a week, her name was Googled 1,220,000 times.
Oh, God.
And she was interviewed in the book and she said, look, I thought it was such a stupid joke that nobody would take it literally.
Sure, yeah.
You know, she lost her job.
Yeah.
She still hasn't really got back on her feet at all.
She still doesn't really have a job, does she?
She got disowned by members of her family because they said that she tarnished her. This girl was 30 years of age. She was just a 30-year-old from New York who tweeted a really stupid tweet. And obviously everybody... Like, I'm not by... For one
the
second...
The tweet was moronic.
The
but
tweet was bollocks.
Yeah,
you know,
but
it really, really
still.
Was. But I honestly... I saw from the other side. And like, so the story continues. She went to Ethiopia and she worked in a maternity hospital in Ethiopia for 6 months.
Did she get AIDS? Did she?
She came back. She came back from to New York and she's had some work in PR. But basically her life was ruined because people just... publicly shamed her.
Yeah, this is it though. This is the problem now with Twitter. Everyone goes on there and they shame everybody. I was saying to Kira, Blind Boy, she was telling me this story, and Kira says, funnily enough, this is actually mentioned in the book, it's like the stocks, like in medieval times. Humans have an urge to shame and humiliate other humans. I don't know what it is, but now instead of stocks, it's this.
It would come psychologically from the projection. Often when it comes to shaming on a large scale like that, we tend to shame people because whatever they've done has reminded us ourselves of something that we ourselves are capable of. So we engage, we project that self-flagellation on other people. So the racist joke that she made, most people would do that
sure.
in company.
Of course.
Most people are guilty of a harmless
Irish people.
Racist joke.
Irish people are the darkest comedic people I've ever come across in my life.
Making all kinds of jokes like that, absolutely. So you're saying, blind boy, it then makes us feel almost uncomfortable with ourselves, is it? So that we then...
It does. Yeah, but as well, if people are being incredibly honest too, because of the scaremongering that people have been said about Africa, a lot of people genuinely, if they were going to South Africa, probably do think... God, I hope I don't get AIDS.
Of course, absolutely.
And
it's
Swaziland, which is just north of South Africa, that is the only country in the world that is genuinely at risk from going extinct because there's 60% AIDS.
Isn't that insane?
But we can't say this because it dehumanizes and it's politically incorrect. So there is a part of people that like to, that little part of themselves they don't like to take ownership of. When somebody else does it on your behalf, then you can take out that rock and smash it off their head.
That's what it is, though, isn't it? Like, that's exactly what it is.
Interestingly, on the subject of shame as a deterrent,
yes.
There was a mayor of Bogota in, I think it's called Bogota.
Colombia, yeah.
Colombia, yes. The capital city. Incredibly interesting mayor called Antanas Macas.
Okay.
And this would have been at the height of Pablo Escobar, so Colombia was nuts. So this mayor, anyway, he came from...
Not to interrupt, legal deterrents weren't working during the height of Pablo Escobar.
People were blowing
each other up with missiles and stuff.
It was chaos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolute chaos. So this the country was in such madness that this new mayor, Antanas Macas, who came from a fine art background, he was a performance artist, he decided, right, okay, nothing is working, I'm going to do mad stuff as mayor. And what he introduced... And we'll say a huge problem in Colombia at the time, in Bogota in particular, loads of people were getting hit by cars. And the reason they were getting hit by cars is because nobody obeyed traffic lights and everyone was running across the street. Mm-hmm. It was just a huge problem.
Sure.
People were getting slapped the whole time. So what Marcus did is that instead of putting traffic wardens there, he employed mimes. And what the mimes would do is that if you walked across the street, if you were jaywalking, a mime would follow you and start mimicking your movement, and then the person would get a red face.
Of course, because that's embarrassing.
Thousands of lives.
Yeah, because that is embarrassing. You don't want someone taking off how you walk or how you look.
Exactly.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
But it's
look him up. Antanas Macas. There's only one documentary about him on YouTube. He's an incredible man.
Have you ever heard
of... His political career started when he exposed his anus on television.
Wow, really? He actually pulled his ass apart and just showed off his anus?
He was pure, actual performance artist, and there was a massive debate on television with politicians. There was corruption. It had gotten so mad, he bent over and actually showed his actual anus on television.
Oh my God.
That was the start of this man's political career.
You know, you're chatting about that guy there. Have you ever heard of the Judge Ted Poe from Texas?
Is he the man who hangs things around people's necks?
Yes. So he's also mentioned in the book as well. And there was two instances. One was that there was a guy and he was involved in a drink driving incident where two people died. And what this judge did was he made him walk up and down a high school for something like 10 years with the sign around his neck saying, "I killed two people drink driving." And your man John Ronson kind of said to him, "Man, that's a little bit harsh and it's a little bit absurd and, you know, all the rest." And he said... That guy went and he set up a halfway sober house and now travels around to colleges and schools talking about the dangers of drink driving. And he says himself that Judge Ted Poe saved him.
Wow. See, man, I'm telling you, public shame, I think, is one of the most powerful deterrents for anything. I'm telling you that. There's some people that I'd nearly say would rather jail time than public shame. For some reason, people can't take it.
We're social animals floating in a sea of language. Do you know what I mean? It's as simple as that. That the currency of social approval, even though we don't like to say it, we absolutely need social approval.
Yeah.
And there's a psychologist, I can't remember who his name is, but he did studies on social approval on animals. And if they did it with monkeys, a monkey would rather starve than be rejected by its friends.
I've read this. I've heard that monkeys that do get rejected can show symptoms of depression. They can kill themselves.
Yeah.
They can start doing really perverse things to themselves if they get ostracized by a group. Apparently, it is terrifying. I suppose because you have to look at it.
Makes sense. Though.
If we'd been ostracized or publicly shamed a few thousand years ago, we'd die. You know. So you know, it's kind of that simple.
Absolutely.
You had to have the acceptance.
if you were ostracised in a Stone Age community, that's it, you're done.
Yeah, you were dead, I suppose.
Forget about it.
That's why you're so terrified. I guess that's why people, in a very kind of, you know, not to break it down and be very cliche, that's why everyone wants to fit in, you know I mean? Because everyone wants to fit in. I don't care what anyone says. Most people...
Everyone wants to fit in.
Most people everyone, want friends, yeah.
I mean, the thing is as well, when you're thinking about evil or thinking about every single person in the world, no matter who they are, they want to be loved by somebody.
Yeah, that's oh, yeah. what I always say.
Absolutely. That is the truth. Some people will try and say they're aloof or they're whatever, they're this and they're that. No way. Everyone wants some type of human contact. Now, maybe not much, and maybe there's some people who are quieter or less social than others. Nobody wants to live completely on their own. And they've said, you know what they've actually shown? I remember this was obscene. They got a monkey or something. It was either a monkey, it was an animal anyway, that like as in like a primate that would have had a very high level of functioning. And they isolated it for years and years and years. They never let it go near any other people. They never let it see humans or other animals. They fed it through a hatch. It eventually killed itself. It just got so sick of being on its own. So, you know.
It has no meaning. We need to reflect from others. I mean, the thing is, well, it's mad because if a person is too reliant then upon the approval of other people, that's a recipe for serious mental health issues.
Yeah, oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't say that.
Massive self-esteem issues.
Yeah. No, here you go. This is it. It's
if you're looking for low self-esteem, basically evaluate yourself based on the opinions of other people. That's the recipe right there.
No, that's not a great idea either. No, I agree with you. You do need a healthy mix of both. But look, I mean, this whole public shame concept is scary and terrifying when you think about it in the context of Twitter.
In modern times, you see, the problem is if you go onto Google and if you Google Justine Sacco, it's going to come up about her.
It's a load of AIDS jokes.
You know, two or 3 years later, where in fairness, she deserves to be allowed to move on with her life. You know what I mean? Her public shaming, my God, it was vicious.
Sure. And relentless.
And relentless.
If it happened at a party, the most she'd get is an awkward silence.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But it happened on the internet and she didn't get to take it down.
Actually, it was a guy from Gawker, right? It was a guy from Gawker that retweeted it to his 15,000 followers.
Oh.
And that's how it actually all went fire
and Gawker,
in the first place.
Gawker is where social justice warriors exist.
You know, and she only had like 142 followers on Twitter. So it was actually somebody else. And your man, John Ronson, he interviewed your man from Gawker. I can't think of his name right now. And he said, listen, her life is absolutely ruined. And he was kind of like, she'll be fine. And it's three years later.
Gawker fella needs to take a bit of responsibility there.
Thank you. I agree.
The mob
because
hunt is too much.
There's been many a time as well where, like, even on our own Facebook page, I've had awful dickheads on the Facebook page, racist everything, right? And they'd say something shocking. If I want to retweet how shocking what they said is, or if I want to share it, I block their name out.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You have
to. Words should be judged because I don't want to be responsible for some person getting the wrath of the irrational wrath of the internet.
And
I don't care how horrible what he said was.
And here's what I've been thinking of lately. Like, I remember a couple of years ago when we were talking about this on Twitter, I'd always say to Chris, you never know what sort of person you're dealing with when you publicly shame them like that or talk about them on Twitter. You don't know what their mental
Not
state is. And a lot of the stories in this book as well ended with the person killing themselves.
That's the worst, you see. A lot of these people end up killing themselves. I'm surprised that Justine Sacco won and a few others didn't kill themselves. Like, honestly,
she thought about it.
I like to think I'd be strong enough to go through that, but if the world hated me that much for something that I felt was unfair, you know, I don't know how I would react, if I'm honest with you. I don't know. Yes.
If you want to know what widespread hate feels like on the internet, release a Christmas number one.
That is true.
Yeah.
But I was reading as well, Chris, you might know about this. There's seemingly some new thing in it's called the right to be forgotten ruling.
Sure.
So if an article or a blog about a person is seen as kind of an inadequate or no longer relevant, that Google can be requested to de-index it from
in
their
the EU,
European
yes,
sites.
Yes, in the EU it can be, because there's much better data protection laws in the EU, and there's much kinder to the individual data protection laws within the EU. And you can go to data protection under EU rulings and say, yeah, get rid of that for me, please, if you don't mind, you know?
Which, that's fair enough.
That is, I think, that, as Kira said, there should be kind of almost a statute of limitations after which you say, okay, this girl got brutalized on the internet for 3 years for an AIDS joke. Can we let it go now?
Her
you know?
Life fell apart.
Can we let
this whole record stuff? I mean, I think it only you should only be on permanent record if it's in the interest and the safety of the public.
There you go. If it's a criminal conviction,
or
something,
a
absolutely.
Pedophile.
There you go. Absolutely. If it's any type
of
criminal
I mean,
conviction,
if you dressed up in blackface for Halloween, You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe we should let that go. This is it, man. Look, Blind Boy. Hey, look, they say the ultimate way to have power over a man is threatened to release his Google search. And, you know, that'll just pretty much have him there. So, like, I mean, look, it certainly
look,
is.
Lads, if it ever happens either of you that your Google searches are released, all right, you need to own it.
I agree.
That's the only way to get through something like that.
I hear you.
Is you need to own it.
Absolutely.
My Google searches are boring.
Are they? I would say they're very interesting, Blind Boy. I would say that.
I spent the entire afternoon looking up the seaweed within Japanese culture, and then I had a look at volcanoes.
Wow, that sounds like fun. I would actually just get inspiration from Blind Boy searches then. Mine are just
the mad shit I just leave out there, but like my actual private searches are incredibly mundane.
I get you.
All right. I had to explain a search that I made on my computer at home, and it was actually for the show.
What did you do?
It was something on swingers, Chris. We were doing something on swingers.
Oh, right.
Very nice. But I looked it up at my home computer, my mum and dad's house, you know? And I kind of left the computer, and I was like, I think I better tell them. So I told my mother, I was like, listen, this
Why didn't you just delete the search?
I was like, this.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I thought it was your dad.
You see, this is it. You see, because honestly, that came into my head. I was like, wait a second here. I could end a marriage. And so I said it to mum, and I was like, mum, I was looking up this on the home computer, by the way. And she laughed it off. And I said, look, you know, I felt I needed to tell you. But she understands, obviously, the sort of show that I work on.
Sure, sure, sure.
So she was cool about it. Yeah, but people have
to
be
careful. I know what you mean. Imagine she
thing.
Hadn't, and then, you know your parents.
What if, right? Here's the thing. So she thinks your dad's looking up swingers. Then she doesn't say it to him and they go around for dinner. She assumes he's into it and all of a sudden she starts shifting money over.
Yeah, she just like takes her top off and just starts going for it.
It could have ended really badly, but I'm glad, you know what I mean, that I was very honest.
Episode of Fawlty Towers waiting to happen.
Yeah, what if you're like mom and dad had gotten a divorce and then years later your mom in a moment of like candor reveals to you, Kira, it was because your dad was looking up swingers websites and I just wasn't it. Yeah, I mean, look.
No, it was me.
This is Chris and Kira on 2FM.